have long held that the government of the United States is well on its way towards becoming a new religious movement. It is a large bureaucracy with a dogmatic approach to the Holy Writ of the United States Code, a series of founding sacred texts complete with Apocrypha and Hadith, and even a pantheon in the Founding Fathers complete with implied capital letters. But nowhere is that more true than the Supreme Court. Children in required indoctrination classes are taught that justices, with names suggesting paragons of social virtue, sit above it all as nearly infallible, impassive arbiters of federal truth. So what happens when human beings insist on being human beings? What happens with the Supreme Court when the Supreme Court counts a man who cosplays as a book-burning, persecuting bigot among its ranks? What do we do when the Supreme Court is wrong? That's what we're hoping to find out on this week's show. Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We got a phone call. You got a phone number. You can give us a call, but this is going to be a really packed show. We got a couple of really good interviews. And joining me today is Becca. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Fantastic.
Hello.
And how are you, Dave?
I am exhausted, but wonderfully happy.
Yes. Yeah, Dave is in the middle of a move.
Yes.
Yeah, we were originally going to be pre-recorded this week, but then the Hobby Lobby decision came down, and I was like, we got to do this one. And it was kind of hard to field a team this week. So thank you guys for being here.
Oh,
really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here.
I was hoping to have a day off, but that ain't happening.
You don't get days off.
No, yeah, days off are for chumps. Oh, boy. But there's some fun news that I'd like to get into first. And on June 23rd at the UN Human Rights Council, a delegate from the Center for Inquiry presented a statement calling out Saudi Arabia to reform its laws regarding blasphemy and to protect freedom of religion by repealing a law that defines atheism as terrorism. On three occasions, the Saudi ambassador raised a point of order in his attempt to silence the CFI delegate, asking the president to stop the intervention of the CFI on behalf of activist and blogger Raif Badawi, who is in prison for apostasy and blasphemy. Have you guys seen the video on this one?
No, I haven't.
No, I haven't.
I can't remember the UN guy, the guy at the UN for CFI, but we interviewed him last year. I'm sure it'll come up on the screen here, but it was great. He's saying, really, you know, the stuff that really needs to be said to people like Saudi Arabia. He's saying, you know, you guys are, this is not, you're on the Human Rights Council and you have a human rights record like this.
Yeah.
You know, and then he, you know, I'm not gonna call it fire and brimstone, but it was an impassioned speech. And then somebody go,
hello, hi.
It was Michael Dodora, but it was the CFI rep was a different woman. I thought the woman was the lady. I thought there was somebody. I don't know. Go check out the video.
Okay.
But so they had this impassioned speech, and then somebody would go,
I think there's a, you didn't dot this I, something.
Okay.
Is that Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, Saudi Arabia. And then the moderator is like, okay, shut up now. They're talking. And then they go back to talking, and it's impassioned.
Yeah.
I ran out of mustard on my...
Okay, shut up now.
So are we talking Khrushchev impassioned, or are we talking banging a shoe?
No, this isn't We Will Bury You type stuff.
Yeah, it was nice to read that they continued to silence him.
Yeah.
And said, wait for your turn. There's a point in this where you will be able to say whatever you want. And whenever that point came, they actually declined.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to say? Yeah, we're on the Human Rights Council, but
I wanted to say I like ham sandwiches.
Yeah, but we think human, well, they don't.
I know. I was joking.
We think human rights are a joke and you should disband. What does Saudi Arabia say? I, in a situation like that,
they wave a Quran around and say, "This is truth. Your opinion doesn't matter." That's all they can
I would assume
say.
That they just double down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And say this: it's our country. We can write, yeah, run it however we want.
Forcing women to cover themselves is in their best interest. Like,
yeah. But it's the idea that what I have to say is, you know, or that my my critiques or the reasons why I don't give people rights is so asinine that I have to talk about parliamentary procedure in order to get you to stop talking about how terrible we are.
Oh, yeah, because...
That's a great defense. All you're doing is proving the point at that point.
Right? Exactly, and yeah. It's like, you know, they don't have a choice. That's all they can do because, you know, what can they say? And yeah, it's just, the whole thing's kind of absurd. And I see the same sort of thing in American politics. You know, someone's making a, you know, actual point about what's wrong with this country or what can be changed, and somebody's like, no, you're not allowed to talk for this long.
Yeah.
It's my turn. Like, yeah. And I want to talk about bathrooms.
But I remember I used to do LNP debate in high school, and I remember, you know, a lot of people thought manipulating the rules was almost better than having good rhetoric.
Well, this was what Anthony Weiner was so good at whenever he was still in office. You know, he could, you know, with the best of them, shoot people down like, it's not your turn to talk. I am going to continue this.
So, are you ready to go to the Pope show?
Oh, bring me to the Pope show.
Okay. Pope Francis held a mass in southern Italy a few Sundays ago in which he spoke out against organized crime. During his sermon, he said those who in their lives follow this path of evil as mafiosi do are not in communion with God. They are excommunicated. Vatican spokesman Ciro Benedetti said in the sermon, it did not qualify as formal excommunication, a legal process in the church, but rather a declaration that actions of mafia members are separated them from the church. The mass was in honor of Niccolo Campolongo? Okay. A three-year-old. Okay, thanks.
Campolongo.
Thank you. A three-year-old who was killed with his grandfather in attack by the crime family
Ndrangheta.
Thank you. Earlier this year.
Yeah, I had a tough one writing that up. There's a whole lot of...
Yeah, but probably should have read that one. This is I love the D&D stuff sometimes. It's horrible. The Catholic Church, cue the standard Catholic Church thing here. But the D&D stuff, when he pretends to be wizards and throws people out of heaven like that, it's kind of funny. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, when you get to the base of the story, it is about a three-year-old being killed, and that's kind of tough to laugh about. But at the same time, it's like no pope has ever before said, we're done with the mafia. There's always been this weird sort of love-hate tie between the mafia and, you know, the mafia has always been one of the Catholic Church's biggest supporters.
It's good for business.
It is good for business, but they're finally seem to be taking that step, saying, like...
Which is why as soon as Pope Francis runs his mouth off again and says, bad people are bad. Did you guys know that bad people are bad?
I know.
Some stuffed shirt from the Vatican shows up and, oh, by the way, bad people might not be as bad.
Well,
they're not really.
Yeah. Well, for the longest time, you know, the mafia gets to go run around claiming that they're religious, you know, they have these religious things.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's nice for him to come out and say, look, you guys are very nice people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hope you understand that we all notice.
But I think...
There's the handlers. There's this Benedettini, or however you pronounce his name. he comes by and say, look, excommunication is a legal process, and just because he says it doesn't mean they've actually been excommunicated.
Even though he's the Pope, and apparently the infallible word of God. Yeah.
And it's the same guy who came around.
They keep doing that to him. They're just like, don't listen to the Pope, by the way.
I believe this is actually the same guy who came when the Pope said that atheists can get into heaven so long as they follow their conscience. This is the guy who came around and said, well, that's not actually true.
Technically, you're not supposed to listen to the Pope on this one.
He is a guy from Saudi Arabia. Excuse me.
There's a technicality here.
I think the point here, though, is whether or not this Pope Francis guy is the reformer that the news is portraying him to be, hint, he's not.
No.
But even if he were, that's not enough to change the Catholic Church. This is what bureaucracy does. Because the head of state changes doesn't mean all those people who have insisted themselves inside of the bureaucracy are going to let, say, child rapists go to prison, or perhaps stop taking money from organizations that kill children, or saying that they're okay and they get to go to heaven and they convince them that, you know, their sins have been forgiven.
Yeah.
It's going to take a lot more than this.
It's a very big ship. It's going to take a lot to turn it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what's up in the news, but this is a big week. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to talk a lot of Hobby Lobby with some people who really know what's going on.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at Radio Versus the Martians.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Billy!
Not again!
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert!
Wow, that's so credible!
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you, and to give me your lunch money!
Aw, anything for family! Here you go!
Wait, Billy! Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence! Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Psst. Hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all? Not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah. Worried yet? With stdhometestkit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with stdhometestkit.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. And this hour, we are talking about Hobby Lobby. And joining us now is Edward Tabash, a constitutional lawyer in the Los Angeles area. He chairs the Nationwide Legal Committee of Americans United for Separation of Church and State and chairs the Board of Directors for the Center for Inquiry and the Council for Secular Humanism. He has authored numerous amicus briefs on church-state separation before the U.S. Supreme Court and the Supreme Court of California. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you. So many Americans, including justices voicing the minority dissent, feel the Supreme Court erred in the Hobby Lobby ruling. Right out the gate, let's just make the case. Are they actually wrong here?
Yes, and I was one of the amicus briefs. I did an amicus brief for the Center for Inquiry. Signing on was American Atheist, the American Humanist Association. Where the Hobby Lobby majority got it wrong is they don't know how to reconcile the two religion clauses, and there's only one way of doing so without tripping into a contradiction. The Establishment Clause, as I have demonstrated in my speeches and research throughout the country, was crafted by the framers in order to make sure that believers and non-believers are equal before the law, in order to make sure that no branch of government can favor one religion over others or all religions over non-believers. The Free Exercise Clause was enacted to make sure that because of someone's views on matters of religion, they don't suffer lesser rights. If the Free Exercise Clause is somehow butchered into providing a constitutional right for the religious to have special rights to dodge complying with laws that are applicable to the rest of us, then it conflicts with the Establishment Clause. So, for instance, in the Santeria case, Church of Lukumi'ai Babalu versus Hialeah, Florida. There, the city of Hialeah, Florida, passed a discriminatory statute that was supposed to be prejudiced against only the Santeria church members. Now, in that case, if you could kill an animal for any reason, even randomly, but you couldn't do it for religious purposes, which was to prevent Santeria animal sacrifice. Well, that singled out a religious group for lesser rights.
Right.
In the Hobby Lobby case, what happened is the courts decided that merely by professing a religious objection, someone can now avoid laws that apply to everybody else. So what that does is it creates a wholesale new legal category where only the religious, by asserting a religious objection, can avoid complying with an otherwise universally applicable law binding on the rest of us.
Okay, so one of the things that happened here is that there was this law that, frankly, I didn't know about, seemed to come through the back door, called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and they referenced that in their ruling. How does that apply here, and how does that manage to trump the First Amendment?
Okay, here's what happened. When the Smith case was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1990, I was one of the few civil libertarian activists to say this is a bad idea. The liberal community didn't understand the church-state implications. They were focused on that Native Americans should be exempt from laws against peyote if the use of peyote was an integral part of their rituals. And so they were concerned about protecting minority non-Christian religions from persecution. But to me, this was misguided, because what they were doing is saying all you have to do is assert a religious objection and you can avoid complying with the law that applies to the rest of us. The comment I made back in 1990, 24 years ago, was that the defect is that a member of a Native American religion can smoke peyote, but an atheist cannot. And so Congress, in response to a decision by the Supreme Court that said, no, the states don't have to allow special exemptions based on religious objection, passed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which requires that government show a compelling interest before forcing someone to comply with a law that violates their religious conscience. And to me, what this was saying was Congress was adversely impacting the First Amendment by saying, we interpret the First Amendment to allow special rights of avoidance for religious objectors.
So my question here is that, okay, so the Religious Freedom Restoration Act could be overturned, but would that affect the precedent set by the Supreme Court in the Hobby Lobby case?
Okay, it's an excellent question. What happened was this. One of the finest church state legal scholars, Marcy Hamilton, who truly gets it on the need not to use the Free Exercise Clause to trump the Establishment Clause, represented clients in a case before the Supreme Court in 1997 and got, in the city of Bernie versus Flores, got the Supreme Court to agree that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was unconstitutional as applied to the states, but the federal government could still use it. However, in a concurring opinion, Justice John Paul Stevens said, Religious Freedom Restoration Act is across the board unconstitutional. Why? Because it allows only the religious and not any specifically mentioned us, atheists and agnostics, to avoid such compliance.
Wow.
So a Religious Freedom Restoration Act still applies to the federal government, and the Affordable Care Act of Obamacare is federal law. So what the Supreme Court unfortunately did is to say that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and the Free Exercise Clause allows only the religious to not provide third-party insurance coverage for contraception. Now, this reasoning, and Justice Ginsburg's dissent was fabulous. Unfortunately, it was a dissent.
Right.
This reasoning could allow a Christian Science employer to not cover for any medical care. It could allow a Jehovah's Witness employer to not cover for blood transfusions. They don't admit that, but that's... Yeah.
So moving forward, what would be the next steps that would need to be taken to try to rein this all in?
The next steps would... unfortunately, we would have to wait for a change in the composition of the court and re-challenge this. That's why my brother and sister atheists are tired of hearing me every 4 years saying the most important issue in a presidential election is the Supreme Court. But until then, the only thing we can do is to try to provide, through Planned Parenthood, other organizations, contraceptive coverage for women who now can't get it through their employer-provided insurance.
So is there nothing that can be done to overturn the Religious Freedom Restoration Act?
Yes, it could. Absolutely, it could be repealed, but Congress won't do it.
You see,
the problem is these types of laws, when they came in the early 90s, for instance, another very bad law is the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act. And this is being used by mega churches around the country so that they go into a small little village and the village has a zoning law against large structures. But because they're a religion, they're able to put the local government to the burden of a compelling interest.
Right.
So because of this, for instance, our Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal that covers Washington State and California and Arizona ruled that a church could force its way into the waterfront in Yuma, Arizona, even though it means the nightclubs within 300 feet couldn't sell liquor. So the problem is these laws were jointly introduced into Congress by the, pardon the pun, unholy alliance of right-wing Orrin Hatch of Utah and left-wing Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts. Because Hatch saw it as a way to do an end run around church-state separation, Kennedy saw it as a way to protect minority religions who might be oppressed by a Christian majority. But as it turns out, any religious claimant and any Christian claimant can avoid complying with a law that otherwise is binding on everybody else. I'll give you another example. Here in California, 1996, I was an amicus brief, Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Law in California, you cannot refuse to rent apartment units to the general public if you're dealing with the general public and the tenants are an unmarried couple. So a court of appeal in California said, oh, but a religious landlord has special rights no one else has, even if they're renting to the general public and not devoting their apartment building to their own religion, they have a right to refuse to rent to unmarried couples. California Supreme Court luckily decided 4-3, I wish it would have been 7-0, but 4-3, that religious landlords who rent to members of the general public cannot have special rights because of their personal religious beliefs to refuse to rent unmarried couples. But what Hobby Lobby did on the national level is to say employers with religious objections to contraception can. Now, even more horrible is, as we pointed out in our brief to the United States Supreme Court, we're not asking employers to use contraceptives themselves or to provide them. All we're saying is that allow your employee with the insurance carrier to decide. And yet these Christian employers felt even that was being too much in the line of causation of enabling the acquisition of birth control.
So to wrap this up within the within the context of the atheism visibility movement and you know, humanism and atheism and skepticism, a lot of conversations I'm having within the community, they talk about, you know, we talk about legal precedents and if this, you know, and if these laws happen, this is the end result and this is what the legal precedent sets. One of the things I hear a lot is that this is the slippery slope logical fallacy. You can't use that as an argument. And I consider this like the Vulcan fallacy, you know, that humans are somehow logical. What's the best way to counteract that among people who are skeptical?
Okay. Well, first of all, our people, non-believers and the non-religious, must understand that we have a critical problem in the very fabric of constitutional law when the United States Supreme Court, that is the final arbiter of the Constitution, says that there are special rights available only to the religious to avoid complying with laws binding on the rest of us. This is very serious. What we need to do is we need to elect a president who will put people on the Supreme Court that we can more or less trust to vote the way the four dissenters did, and to have a Senate in place that will confirm them. Because in the meantime, what will happen now is, if you read the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeal decision, that was one of the cases that was included in last week's decision, if you read that decision, it basically lays down in front of the religious juggernaut and says, anytime somebody says, oh, my religion doesn't approve of that, you don't have to comply. So could we get to the point where, let's say that I go into a restaurant here in Los Angeles, restaurant does business with the general public, and the proprietor says, wait a minute, I know who you are. You're a prominent atheist. The church I belong to sincerely believes we should not do business with non-believers. I can't seat you in my restaurant. I mean, doesn't that evoke the governor of Georgia, Lester Maddox, in the late 60s, where he got elected governor of Georgia, refusing to seat people, black people, in his chicken restaurant?
Well, the only good thing good thing about that is that it would make people more aware. It would make the problem more visible.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Actually, I don't want to risk that.
I don't either. I just hope that it would at least change things. No, I agree with you.
here's the thing. In order to normalize atheists and for us to have full social, political, and most of all legal equality, we need a legal system that recognizes that the religious has no greater rights than we do. See, a lot of people say that I'm a threat to the rights of the religious. Not at all. I want us all to have equal rights before the law. But it is the legal system's special privileging of religion that puts us in this bind. I mean, quite frankly, I think this is a devastating result. We predicted it, and I don't know what, I mean, we have to huddle, all of us involved in church-state separation. We have to see where we go from here. I don't have all the answers, but I will say this, that there is, and I know, again, a lot of my brother and sister atheists accuse me of being the skunk at the garden party, but I don't share this newfound optimism that secularism is on the rise through some natural process of its own, that religion is waning, that prejudice against atheists is diminishing. I don't see that. I see us as having to be vigilant and working harder than ever before to make sure that we have equal rights in society. And this optimism that within 20 years of its own accord, atheists will be more accepted, it's not going to happen unless we make it happen.
I absolutely agree.
I agree with
you. I absolutely agree. There is, in the history of the United States, there has never been a fight for civil rights that hasn't had a fight attached to it. We have to work.
Exactly.
We can't wait.
Yeah.
Well, and this decision just shines a light on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Edward Tabash is a constitutional lawyer. He chairs the Nationwide Legal Committee of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and chairs the board of directors for the Center for Inquiry and the Council for Secular Humanism. Thank you very much. There's a lot of stuff here that needs to be unpacked, and thank you for helping us out with that.
Okay, and I'm going to, actually, I think I forgot to email Rebecca a copy of the brief, which I'll do right now.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. Thank you very much.
Okay, sure.
Once again, because of the importance of the episode today, I forgot Peggy's challenge, and it's interesting because all the Peggy's Challenge stuff happened on Sunday, and there's a lot of messages here, so I want to get through them. Megan from Arlington, Virginia writes, I love y'all. Thank you for what you do. Keep up the awesome work. In solidarity, Megan. Rick from Elma, Washington writes, I don't drink coffee, but the show perks me up. And Steven from Kent, Washington writes, you guys do some awesome work and deserve to have your show broadcast from coast to coast. I'm working on it. Thank you guys very much. If you would like to contribute to Peggy's Challenge, Peggy's Challenge being the challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help keep us on the air, you can go to our website at askanatheist.tv, click on the friendly yellow button on the right-hand side of the screen, and it'll take you directly to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give to the show goes directly to show production.
But I've been waiting for my paycheck.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's been a couple months.
There's a line forming, yeah.
Okay. You mean I don't get paid for this? What?
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go!
Wait, Billy! Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence! Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp!
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists, with a rational worldview, informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Psst. Hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah, worried yet? With STDHomeTestKit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with STDHomeTestKit.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to AskAnAtheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to PayPal@AskAnAtheist.tv.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Like I said, historically, every civil rights fight has, in fact, been a fight.
Well, and that's kind of what I was getting at before, is this will finally make us put our dukes up. Mm-hmm. Like this, why the only reason why I would say, well, the positive thing is now we know it's a fight.
Yeah.
Well,
I think one of the key things that he said that really stuck with me is when you look at, look, what the court has basically said is that religious people have rights that the rest of us do not.
Yeah.
And I think that's key. And I think if we can like really pound on that and like really get people to understand.
Well, not
that.
Just religious people, because corporations are people. Yeah. Well, so religious absolutely. Corporations have well, more rights than we do.
Yeah, but when we can get people to understand how important that is, that you're saying that this group of people has rights that this group of people doesn't, I think everyone realizes that the whole founding of this country was based on the very opposite idea of that.
There's a fine point here that goes to the editorial thing of Ask an Atheist, which we're talking about corporations as people. That's generally not politics that Ask an Atheist talks about. No. But in this case, it unfortunately, we've had our faces rubbed in it, because now, because corporations are people, they have religious rights, and because they are the boss, essentially, they have, and because of this ruling, they have rights that trump ours, the Trump people's, and unfortunately, that totally takes this corporate personhood and brings it directly into the separation of church and state battle, and we can't not have an opinion on that anymore.
Well, it also endangers those who are going out to get jobs, because
yeah.
they might have to upfront to say, well, I need to know if this is going to be covered.
And it goes to so many different things besides just how employees are treated. I mean, does anyone trust corporations to not find some loophole to say, look, we don't have to follow pollution laws because
yeah.
our religion is against it, you know, because we believe that God gave us this planet and we can't break it.
Deeply
so therefore,
held belief.
We yeah. are going to dump our toxic waste into a river.
Yeah. So I think if there is a silver lining here, as you were pointing out, you know, we've had the social, we've had social evolution and social growth in the atheism visibility movement among humanists, among atheists, among other, you know, skeptics, other free thinkers. But there is a big fight ahead of us. We are, I always said that this fight we're doing, don't think of it in terms of 5 years. Don't think of it in terms of a decade. Look at 50 years on the inside. This is going to be a big fight. Look at the civil rights battle against racism. racism. Look at the, you know, look at the civil rights battle against bigotry against homosexuals. There was a fight, and well, that fight is still happening.
Well, honestly, once they once the other side notices that we're ready to fight, that's when they dig their heels in deeper.
Yeah.
Things go slower because there's more and more resistance once you start saying, I am going to fight for my rights. I'm Absolutely. Going to have them.
So we've got some of the legal end covered, but there's we still need to talk the legal, but there's also a social end of this. This is going to be a fight in the courtrooms. This is going to be a fight. This is going to be a fight in public. It's not going to be with guns and knives. We're not going to go Michigan militia and bunker ourselves down, but there is going to be a political battle going on here, and we need to talk about that. And one of the groups at the forefront of this political battle is the FFRF. And to talk with them, we have Annie Laurie Gaylor, and she's the co-founder and president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation and serves on the board of directors for the Women's Medical Fund in Wisconsin. She is a strong advocate for maintaining separation of church and state, as well as access to reproductive health and choice for women. How are you doing today, Annie?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thanks. The FFRF just took out a full-page ad in the New York Times, and your organization filed an amicus brief detailing the ways in which the Religious Freedom Restoration Act violated the U.S. Constitution. Given that the justices relied on the RFRA for their ruling in Hobby Lobby, did SCOTUS just rubber stamp the act indelibly, or is there a way we can unseat it?
Well, they really didn't take up the issue of the constitutionality of RFRA. The Freedom From Religion Foundation's amicus brief before the Supreme Court that was written by Marcy A. Hamilton, who I know was just talked about, who's a foremost scholar on this, was the only brief that even suggested that the statute was unconstitutional. And they did not decide this decision. The Supreme Court didn't decide it based on the Constitution. In other words, they didn't say the First Amendment says it's okay for religious zealots who run corporations to deny health insurance for contraceptives they disapprove of. They said that RFRA would allow them to do that. And so this is not the end of court battles on the constitutionality of RFRA, and it certainly is not the end of our work to overturn what Congress enacted very cavalierly in 1993 with very little thought as a reaction against the Smith case that had to do with the right to smoke peyote by prisoners.
So going back to that 1993 law, you know, back then you didn't have quite the sort of tie between the religious right and the political spectrum. And so how did so many members of Congress who weren't like so blatantly religious ever pass this law in the first place? Like, how did that even happen?
Well, I think Congress is just as religious, or if not more so, in 1993 as it is today.
Yeah,
and the religious right is basically just as strong. We had Clinton, a Democrat in office, and we see politicians of both parties constantly bending over backwards to propitiate religionists and the religious right. And you're probably too young to remember this huge outcry when the Supreme Court made this ruling that there wasn't a constitutional right to worship via smoking peyote.
Sadly, I'm not too young.
the churches just were all enraged over this because they felt this was the slippery slope and so on.
Right.
And so they were the ones who got this enacted. And it's kind of sat there slowly being enacted, but now we're seeing the real danger of RFRA. I would also point out that we have 6 Catholics on the U.S. Supreme Court, 5 of whom for years have been voting in lockstep, ultra-conservative, ultra-Catholic men.
Yeah.
And that's why this case was lost. And if Obama had had a chance to replace one of them, it would have gone the other way.
And something I've been wondering is, before, it, whenever individuals were only people, it didn't seem to affect as many people whenever this RFRA was enacted. But now that corporations are now viewed by Congress as people, I feel like we're going to start seeing more and more of this RFRA coming to bite us.
Yes, the Citizens United case has set the stage, and now this is, the McCutcheon case kind of accented it, and now this is, the other shoe is dropping in terms of saying that somehow corporations have religious rights, and in fact they have more rights of conscience than people, that, than their employees, than women. And this was a terrible decision, a moral decision, and this is the result of this Catholic bloc on our Supreme Court, which is now upholding the fight that has been made by fundamentalists and Catholics to overturn the Affordable Care Act's preventive health care coverage for contraception, which has been controversial since the Obama administration first enacted it, and it is a great attempt to overturn this, and so this is kind of the worst development so far, and we have probably about 75 lawsuits wending their way through to the Supreme Court through the court that are various permutations attacking the Affordable Care Act, saying that contraception is not a right of women employees. And some of these are by people like Notre Dame. These are not people. Universities, Catholic institutions, hospitals, but some of them are also for-profit corporations. So it is a very bad decision.
So, I've been trying to make the case here because what I've been seeing on the news is a focus on reproductive rights, which is incredibly important, but the case I'm trying to build here has been one that this has a direct effect on the atheism community, on the free thought community. But let's take it to reproductive health for a minute. What can we do to support access to reproductive health choices in the light of this ruling? What is, as those of us on the ground, what is our next step?
Well, FFRF was the first to put out the call that we must repeal RFRA, but that's not going to happen immediately. And what is happening right now is the White House and liberal members of Congress are hustling to see what they're going to be able to do to make sure that women maintain contraceptive coverage. And if you read that decision by Alito, which was a very, very difficult decision to read, he did actually say right in the decision that, of course, if it wanted to, Congress could step in and provide the contraceptive coverage that Hobby Lobby and other corporations are seeking to deny women employees. But this has to be enacted, and this is an election year, a midterm election year. And, you know, this is not going to be easy. And so people have to, atheists, feminists, whoever cares about women's rights and separation of church and state, are going to have to contact their legislators and say in Congress and say, cover it. Do what you can. This is an emergency.
Out of curiosity, because, okay, I'm not a legal scholar in any light, but I know that there is definite precedent for overturning a Supreme Court decision. You know, most famously, Brown versus Board of Education overturned Plessy versus Ferguson. I know Lawrence v. Texas actually overturned a precedent set that upheld Texas sodomy laws. How is there any chance that down the road that this precedent could be overturned like that? Or is there any method?
The precedent would either have to be overturned by the court itself, but the obvious solution is for Congress to repeal the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, because that's what this decision was based on. It's an easy call. This is how we got RFRA in the first place. They sought to overturn the peyote decision by the Supreme Court. I don't necessarily think that some of the conservative justices who supported this decision necessarily would mind that. You know, it took away rights from them, in a sense.
Yeah.
And going back to what you were just saying a moment ago, I know that people are trying to figure out what they're going to do in light of this new decision. And I've seen that, for instance, whenever Obama, he had made an executive order that if, you know, things were to interfere with people getting their birth control, that people would sign a document that says, well, we are opting out, and, you know, if the women need to find it, they need to do it elsewhere. And I see that people are now trying to get out of even signing that opt-out form.
Well, that's one of the prominent cases that's wending its way through the courts, and it's the Little Sisters or something or other in Colorado, which is a group of nuns, and all they have to do, they have a social work mission, and so they hire people who are not all Catholic, or they may be liberal Catholic, and so they did not even want to sign that piece of paper that just opted themselves out of Affordable Care Act, when they refused to sign that piece of paper, this went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And it went before Justice Sotomayor, who is the sixth Catholic on the Supreme Court. She voted right on the Hobby Lobby case, but she said that they didn't have to sign that piece of paper for now. So, I mean, it's per- perfectly ridiculous that the nuns are saying that this is under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that this would be a burden on them to have to sign this piece of paper to opt out. They think contraception is a sin, and if they sign that piece of paper, they know women, their women employees will do something sinful. And that is literally the argument they're making. Now, this is before the Tenth Circuit. It's not before the Supreme Court yet, but I was very distressed by Sonia Sotomayor's action, which was the last day of the year on New Year's Eve, right up to the last moment. And she, you know, it's kind of a little nerve-wracking to know how she's going to go with when that comes up. These cases deal with pseudo-religious institutions that were not part of, they were not exempted under the Affordable Care Act, like churches and denominations were all automatically exempted. They don't have to cover contraception for their employees. And there was a huge hullabaloo when universities and hospitals were not considered part of that. And so that's what's being appealed. And there's, like I said, about 75 cases in the courts now. And they're kind of a combination of fundamentalist and Roman Catholic lawsuits, and they are working in concert together to deny women contraception. And fundamentalists used to not be anti-contraception. This is kind of settled law. Back in 1965, the Griswold versus Connecticut case found a right of privacy for married couples to use contraception, and that gradually opened up the courts, and we overturned all of these Comstockian laws that make contraception indecent articles.
Yeah.
And Wisconsin, where I'm here, Madison, Wisconsin, and we were the last state in the union to have a law overturned, 1974, that prevented unmarried people from purchasing so-called indecent articles. That's how recent this is. But, you know, this is 40 years now, and it was settled law, and now there's this huge attack. It is a reproductive war on women by the religious right.
Absolutely. So, but we're coming up to against the top of the hour. So quickly, I know the FFRF is not done with this, neither with the legal fund or with the community. What does the FFRF have on the horizon, and how can we participate?
Well, I don't think that it's going to be directly on the horizon. I am going to be urging the Secular Coalition of America to take this on as their lead item. You know, we're part of the coalition. Most secular organizations belong to it. It serves as our lobbying arm, and I would say this is an emergency, and it's all the secular groups are going to have to do what they can. FFRF is not per se a lobbying group. We can do a little lobbying, but we are going to have to, as our ad in the New York Times said, wake up America to the growing dangers of theocracy. And, you know, when we took this ad in the New York Times, they said, okay, you have to show it to us before we approve it. And they emailed me back and they said, everything is fine, but we're just fact-checking your headline, the all-male, all-Roman Catholic majority on Supreme Court puts religious wrongs over women's rights. They didn't know that we had five members of the Supreme Court voting in bloc who are Catholic. I think that the American public generally doesn't realize the extent to which the Supreme Court is held hostage by ultra-conservative Roman Catholicism. And so we'll, you know, continue to educate on that. We have an action alert at our website that gives people an idea of what to tell their members of Congress. We'll be following it, of course, very closely. But again, there will be, an immediate chance for Congress to act and to say that the federal government will cover contraception for women who are employed by these zealous corporations. And it will be very important for the secular community to support all of that.
Annie Laurie Gaylor is the co-founder and president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation and serves on the board of directors for the Women's Medical Fund in Wisconsin. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. This is so important. And we have a comment from Dennis in Tacoma who asks us, so as atheists, do you support religious believers to receive health insurance that has contraceptive coverage? So let's get to the point. Let's get right to it. And I want to do this quickly. I can't answer as an atheist, but I can answer as Sam. And I will answer as Sam. And this Sam's answer actually comes from Mike Gillis's answer, which is there's a fallacy here. The idea that the health insurance is the corporations and not the persons is a fallacy. It's an absolute fallacy. You work for that. It is part of your pay. It is yours to do with what you want. No. And as a result, if you want to spend your health insurance money on contraception, you should be allowed to do that. And I am against anyone telling anybody else what to do and saying my religious dogma should have the force of law. Of course I support health insurance that has contraceptive coverage. That shouldn't even be a question.
It definitely shouldn't be a question. It's how is that any different from a boss telling you that you are not allowed to spend your paycheck on condoms because he doesn't approve of them?
And we're absolutely beginning to see stuff like that. This is just this Hobby Lobby thing is just the tip of the iceberg. There's more of this happening. I know Wheaton College in my hometown is doing some weird stuff.
As a woman, I have some fears now. You know, I don't have a job, but it's feasible that in the future at some point, whenever Anders is in school, I might apply for one. And after all of these corporations are now coming forward and suing to have their religious rights, you know, recognized, I don't know if I will be aware whether or not the place that I am going for an interview is one of these places. And will I need to be upfront? Will I need to just out myself suddenly and have that interfere with whether or not I can get that job? It just seems like now you either have to fall in line with the employer's beliefs or...
Right.
You're just in trouble.
It's like I said, I'm not a legal scholar, and when it comes to Supreme Court decisions in general, I will hold myself to, I don't like the decision because blah, 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 because I don't have the legal training to know most of what's going on. This is one case where I'm like, no, they got this wrong.
Yeah.
This is it. They got this one wrong.
When they discuss the finer points of legalese, which is the worst programming language ever, I tune out. That's not why I went to school. And there are people who went to school with that to learn that, to know exactly what that means. Those are the experts I have to go to.
Right.
But when you have something like this, when you have the First Amendment, you know, Congress shall make no law, blah, 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 establishment of religion. I should be able to quote it, but I'm lazy.
Congress shall make no law for the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
Exactly.
Yay.
And this one's a clear-cut one. There's no question on this one. It's this is, I promised myself when we did this wouldn't be another Sam Comes Unhinged episode. this is such a big, you really hammered this home, Becca. This is such a big point. This may be the moment when we
know that it's a fight.
We know that we're in the fight now. This
or that it's going to start going against us.
Yeah,
the tide is trying to push back against us and say,
right,
stop it, go away. You know, our.
Yeah.
We have a say over what you think do.
And it's such a strange thing, because if you look over the last 20 years, and maybe even longer, every court case tended to fall our way. You know, but suddenly the court now decided that the law is not nearly as important as someone's belief.
This is the clear encroachment of religion into American politics and the steps towards dominionism and America truly becoming a Christian nation, where I will be thrown in prison for doing what I do every week.
Well,
this is a major step in that direction. We can talk about reproductive rights. We can talk about stuff like that. That is so important. That is incredibly key. But what I'm noticing in the atheism community is people aren't realizing this is a
broad
shot at us.
It's broad.
This is
too.
Right at us. This hits us directly. We are not on the side of this. We are not collateral damage. This is a shot directly across our bow. And I really hate using, you know, warfare terms in situations like this, because people are apt to actually go to war over stuff like this. They're, you know, that happens in our history. There's that whole American Revolution thing going on where this was a part of it. That's why establishing a religion, the establishment of religion and the anti-establishment clause have been so important. And this pack of knobs has just decided that 270, 80, 90 years of history doesn't matter for beans.
Yeah. And, you know, it started Greece versus Galloway, what, a month ago?
Yeah.
And, you know, what was the headline that I mentioned on the air about how, you know, the Supreme Court has decided that the whole reason for the founding of this country doesn't matter anymore? And this is just a further move in that direction.
It's scary to think about what this will imply and what kind of cases we'll see coming in the future.
Yeah.
It's not just going to be reproductive rights. This isn't the line that's drawn. Now there's a precedent set that you can, as a corporation, have your religious rights and go forward and apply those to the people who you...
Yeah, and it's time we have to start
playing.
We have to start talking about this. I don't care if you're a liberal. I don't care if you're a conservative. I don't care if you're a libertarian. I don't care if you're. I don't care if you're green. I don't care what your politics are. I do care if you're prohibition party. I do care if you're constitution party. I do care if you're a tea partier, because on your platforms, our rights and the ending of those rights are front and center.
Yes.
That's a big part of it, and we can't ignore that anymore.
Yeah.
Not in this environment. Not in the ascendancy of the moral majority. As Edward was talking about earlier, I remember those days. I remember the moral majority. I remember everybody telling, you know, saying what a horrible president, you know, Bill Clinton was. It was amazing because you had militia movements and people saying they had to fight against the government when Clinton was president, and then that died down. And now it's back. And I think it's time that we have to be clear that we know that religion plays a big part of this. You can be economically conservative. You can be a business conservative. I don't care. But when you say your religious rights trump mine, we have a problem. And unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for today. I'd like to thank Rebecca Vitzman and Dave Brulette. Thanks for coming out, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. My technical assistants were Becky Friedman and Nick Kennedy. Writing was Robert Ray and Becky Friedman. Guests were Eddie Tabash and Annie Larry Gaylor. The show is produced by me. Voicemail 206-420-0997. You can go to askanatheist.tv. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. No post-show this week. Oh, man, this is a big one. Thanks for this. See you next week.
So I sent you your Mephisto sneeze me.
I saw.
It's from last week.
Oh.
The moment you said, I was like, I'm going to...
Nargle from Fargle. We have a caller. We have Nargle from Fargle on the phone.
Oh, how is it out in Fargle?
How you doing, Nargle from Fargle?
Everything you say is wrong. And I don't like you. And your cats are not very nice to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to go away now.
Whatever you like, Rush.
Oh, well,
I'm hanging up on you.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, that was only sort of awesome.